has, was the art director on New World and on There Will Be Blood, which were production designed by Jack Fisk. He also just got an Emmy for John Adams. Talk about the production of the film in Virginia, but I just want to start maybe by Mary, maybe just telling us about the kind of origins project and the whole script. Perry, you should know, is a an executive producer on the Chronicles of Narnia film. He's also a writer. His novel Hero was published last year. Hunter, co-director of the film, is an editor at Paper Magazine. That right? They're both writers. That just so this began as a writing project. Can you just tell us about the project?
Yeah, you know, this is a deeply personal story to both of us. I would say equally parts personal. We are so fortunate to be up on the stage right now, especially with Sissy and Troy, because we took what was a very deeply personal story, and Hunter will talk about this in a second, and I took my half of it, and we sort of grew it together, and we wrote this with a picture of Sissy on our wall for years, and we just believed that we could do this. We really did. We just believed we could do it. And then who should be up here is Wayman C., one of our producers. Got it in her hands and said, okay, you know, Sissy likes the material. And from there, you know, it took a few years to really put it together. But I think you should probably talk about the personal thing.
Maggie in the film was my mother's best friend, and Andy, who died, was my best friend as a child. And Troy's character was the remaining son who was left. And I sort of watched this family after this tragedy fall apart, but they, everything stopped. Time just stopped, and it took years for it to come back around. So that was a seed that affected me as a child. I lost my best friend, and I watched their family sort of, you know, crumble apart because of it. And the whole point of the movie was that there's hope and, you know, healing and healing, basically.
It's real Southern Gothic.
It is, you know, we wanted to tell, I mean, I think when you go to, Hunter and I are both Southern, when you attend the University of Virginia, you know that Mr. Jefferson intended for you to be here and have 4 years that are just yours to really knock it out and in any way, and you're supposed to really do something special with that, and I think that this is one of those things that's just incredibly special. It didn't blow you away with its visual effects. It didn't blow you away with, we did have a car chase. most movies have stunt people, you know, who do their stunts in their movies. Well, Sissy didn't use, you know, Sissy was her own stunt person.
We had a really small budget.
I wonder how you became aware of Troy and Sissy, the script, what attracted you to it. I just want to say first about Troy. I'm looking at him, one of my just favorite performances in films we've shown here in recent years, your performance in Soldier's Girl. Here presenting it. I'm glad we finally got you to Troy.
Thanks.
So just how did you become aware of the script, Troy?
Well, I wish I had great story for you, but Mark Johnson, Uber producer, who I can't see, contacted my agent and contacted me and said there's this very small Southern film star in Sissy Spacek. I said, well, I'll do it. Do you want to read it? I said, no, I don't care. That was an easy pushover, and then, you know, it took a while for them to get it set up, and I don't really care, but I love Silver City's Fair.
They told me the same thing. They called him this really great young actor, Troy Garrity.
I used to drive around in LA with, she did To Kill a Mockingbird, book on singing on tape when I was there, and then and in my car, listening, trying to talk like a sissy. They have a whole new meaning than sissy boy.
That wasn't a Virginia accent.
Script that you became aware of it, what was some of
Wayman C. Brought it to me, and then brought Hunter and Perry to me. And, you know, I thought this might be, I think this is it's a character-driven thriller. And I thought, okay, well, I've worked for a really long time, I'm getting way up there. This may be the last time I get to be chased through a cornfield. That's before I knew I was a stuntman. Actually, there was a stunt woman that she was great. She was a little larger than me, and they had this truck was chasing me, and I had been training for this for 30 years running, and I thought, okay, no problem. That truck was fast. And I got a Charlie horse in my leg at one point, so that I really almost bought the farm.
You're about the choice of locations, the discovery of the developing of data. Just you say something about the design of the film?
Well, when I came on, you all had already looked at the Trigo farm.
We'd looked at a few farms, but it was a miracle. I think a lot of people in the room might be surprised to find out that this movie was made, it was shot on two different farms. The corn was on a separate, the cornfield was in a separate place, and we couldn't quite figure it out until David Crank, the genius spatial thinker that he is, called us excited one day and told us how it was going. And that was a really exciting day when you called us and told us that.
First form, so I had to come up with something.
Yeah, other we were going to use Jimmy Dean of Jimmy Dean's Sausage, yeah. his farm, but he liked to carry around a shotgun. So we decided not to use that.
We did look around at some other farms, but this particular farmhouse was extremely, I guess, I should say, decrepit.
It was toxic.
It had black.
The house of the character. We looked at probably 20 houses.
Yeah, we looked at farms
that were beautiful and perfect, and they had running water, and everything was set up.
And it echoed real life, because that spot is actually being torn down right now, and they're going to make it into suburbs. And they talked about turning that house into like the golf, clubhouse. But you'd have to go in with hazmat uniforms, because it was falling through in black mold.
And to David Crank's credit, he had just come off like a film, John Adams, with like a huge budget. I mean, huge art budget. And he came onto our film with like it was like a crew of two.
Yeah.
It was small budget.
He was like a little ready hand. He did everything.
Well, we had a special favor pulled in by you and Sissy.
I was thinking I called Sissy something Jack and asked him if he told me they had a couple pieces. I thought we'll go get carpet. Like one or two things. And we sent the truck up and we filled a 24-foot truck up out of their house. Like, heaven, they don't throw anything away like I should. They have a barn or something.
And a lot of that was your childhood furniture, right?
Well, I think a lot of it was.
It was a mix.
It was your furniture. Everybody had.
It was everybody's.
Well,
no one was safe.
Can I out you? Because the bed I was sleeping in, I rolled over and just being curious and opened up the nightstand, and there was her daughter Skylar's diary.
Stand up, project, I'll also repeat if anybody can hear. Are there any questions from the audience? Yes, over there.
Yeah, where did you find that wonderful kid?
We looked through
Lisa May Finn Cannon was our cast director out of Wilmington for kids, but I have a little experience when it comes to casting kids through and Mark Johnson does too, because we worked on the line which is kids, and it taught us some lessons about a lot of kids. Because you want real kids, you don't want child actors. I mean, you got to screen the parents too. But you laugh, but that's true. You want to have child-driven versus parent-driven. You don't want to have the parents driving to do it. You want the kids who really want to do it. And Colin, we knew. I mean, we actually have more than just one. We have a lot of kids in this movie.
There were.
And they were all quite talented, and we needed to have someone.
Colin was the one that stuck out the most from the very beginning. We went to the Wilmington to meet them all, and he was the first one that came in, which was bad, because he just nailed it.
Yeah.
And we had to sit through all of them. They were all great. Colin was kind of our first choice. And Kenny Hinkle.
Kenny Hinkle.
Who played Andy, but no, with lines. He was the second choice. He just never done anything.
Kenny was so brave, though, because he lied it when we shot the death scene. It was something cold.
He let us run over him.
Yeah. It was such a cold day. And Sissy would do to get the character. And Sissy had the entire... We had these salty old farmhands. And I remember turning to one of them, and he just had tears streaming down his face. He was like... It was just so sad. And then Kenny Hinkle jumps up and goes, "He's alive!"
The minute everybody was like, "Hey, Hunter, where's my money?"
That kid was a stitch. But Colin was, we knew he had to be every bit as, we knew he had to be able to go toe-to-toe with Sissy, and Troy, who were such incredible actors. And fortunately, part of being such a great actor is about giving. And Hunter and I learned a lot on this movie too, because we learned about how actors give. And sometimes that involved, you guys giving it to us too.
Any other? Yes, so here, please stand up. Please stand up. She's asking about Dave Matthews' involvement.
Dave came to us and auditioned. But I say that Dave came to us. Dave and Troy at one point shared the same agent, right?
Yes.
Agent. And so she knew about the script and knew there was this juicy villain part. And knew that Hunter and I were looking for someone who was going to come to us with an idea about how to take that role and keep it, have them running, screaming away from the cliche type of villain, of what that role could have been. And so before we hadn't even looked at a single person for that part. He was in town doing a concert, and they literally battered us to death. They wouldn't leave us alone. So we met with him, so we sat down with him, and he gave us his take. He auditioned, and I think we were really both taken aback by that. We were impressed. He did this scene, the opening scene, where Troy gets hooked up to all that gas, petrol, and blows, fire in his face. But, Dave played it. He used his assets, his voice. He used it as a seduction. And we thought that was an interesting take on it. I thought he brought some interesting ideas to the table. And Sissy, I remember the scene in the yard where it's the three of them. Sissy was always very good about, you know, did you get that? Dave was doing some really interesting stuff there. Because he was playing really deranged. I mean, he was not your average villain. He was in the middle. He wasn't, you know, your dealer on the street, and he wasn't the head Memphis Mafia guy. He was really pathetic by the end. And we think he projected it very, very well. I think, you know, he did a great job. I thought he did a phenomenal job. I don't know, what do you guys work?
I loved him before, I loved him during, I loved him after.
Yeah. Needs a lot more coming from her.
Any others? I also want to thank the Virginia Film Office, which is the sponsor of tonight's show, and also, I guess, facilitated the production of this.
Yes, Andy Evans.
Andy
Evans.
Anecdotes about the production in Virginia and the kind of help that the film office could provide.
Is there anyone who worked on the movie here?
Stand up. Spread the word. It's going to be at 10:15 Saturday night. Thank you all for coming, and thank you all for coming.